Blog Talk Radio.
Happy that you're listening to the Eastern Airlines Radio Show, and this is our 141st episode. Nearly 3 years now and gaining more popularity with each episode. For our new listeners, we'd like to introduce you to the EAL Radio Show and our host. We start our broadcast every Monday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on your company's internet dial. www.ealradioshow.com or at www.blogtalkradio.com/Captain Eddie. The hosts for the radio show are from many different locations, South, North, Central Florida, Georgia, North Carolina, New York, and on occasion I end up in Martha's Vineyard for the summer. That's me, Jim Hart. Well, you'll find me during the summer months, and then in West Palm Beach, when the cold weather gets into my bones, and my wife's bones as well. Our host for tonight's broadcast includes Steve Thompson. Hi, Steve. How are things up there in Roaring Gap, North Carolina?
Hi, Jim. Thank you. Well, things are a little bit on the chilly side, and our snowbirds are leaving rapidly. And the trees have all shed their leaves onto our yards, and we even have those blown off the yard now and into the woods. But we've got a wind chill that is going to be down near freezing tonight and for the next several nights. Jim.
Well, I'll tell you, you can keep that up there, Steve. Those of us down in the sunny south are just thrilled to be here. How about Chuck Albright over there in the retirees' most fantastic community called the Villages in Florida? Chuck?
We're just doing just fine. We had a beautiful 81 degrees, and it's going to go down to a balmy 65 tonight. We did have a little rain, and they do predict a little cloudy and some thunderstorms tomorrow morning. But other than that, we have our people out on our 50 golf courses out there just beating the band with them clubs.
Oh, great. I know Neil Holland is there, and he's our producer and engineer located in beautiful Ponte Vedra, Florida. That's up near St. Augustine. How about it, Neil?
Yes, sir. Beautiful in St. Augustine. Right now, we've had a lot of rain, and we always welcome rain in Florida. A few years back, we had a dry period, and it seemed like the whole state of Florida was on fire. But Ponte Vedra, Florida, a lot of people don't know where it is. We're halfway between Jacksonville and St. Augustine, and near the World Golf Hall of Fame. But it's a beautiful area, and it's in the Jacksonville, Northeast Florida area. Jim?
That's great. Our official Yankee living in New York is George Jen. George, what's happening up there in the Big Apple?
Well, as the official Mets fan living here in New York, not the Yankees, I'm happy to report that everything is well here. In fact, it was 65 degrees up here today, but it's supposed to go down to 25 tonight. So I guess we're in for a big change. But that's the bad news. The good news is that the fish are still biting, especially the striped bass. So if anybody wants to cash in on the striped bass fishing, you probably have about 2 weeks left to do it up here.
That's out there in the race, isn't it, George?
No, actually, the race has been quiet this fall, as Montauk has been quiet. All of the fishing for the striped bass this fall, for reasons unknown, have been right off the south shore of Long Island, more toward New York City than out east. And nobody can understand why, but it's one
fantastic.
Of those fishing mysteries.
Our newest host is down in the Boca Raton area, Cecile Intriago. And Cecile happens to be in my Eastern Airlines retirees chapter. So, Cecile, what's going on in Boca?
Okay, in Boca, I can tell you Charlie Berkeley, my business partner with RE/MAX Advantage Plus, caught a sailfish over the weekend with his fish in his fishing club. So I thought you might be interested in that.
Wow.
I also want to let you know that the values here in South Florida have are slowed down. They were 12 to 15%, but they're back to normal, what Southeast Florida considers normal, which is 4 to 6%. So we're now at the regular property value, the fair market value, before the big boom and bust that happened in 2004. So this is good. Inventory is very little, so but business is good, and as Jim said, the weather is perfect.
Well, I tell you, Cecile mentioned at one of our meetings that you're right, the available housing is not what it should be, and they're hoping for that to pick up. Now, our telephone contact to be live on the air with us is 213-816-1611 or toll-free at 877-572-1861. First, either number will get you to our caller board, but then you can join our discussion. Just don't forget, when you dial those numbers, hit number one on your telephone keypad to bring us right into the show. Our show tonight, we have two special guests, David Lee Russell and John Ruth. Steve, would you like to introduce David?
Steve?
Jim, I'll be happy to. And David, we're glad to have you here. And as a matter of a little introduction, David Lee Russell is the author of three history books on the American Revolution as it unfolded in the South. This focus on the South was approached out of observation that most books covering the period of the American history centered on the events in New England and Middle Atlantic colonies. He's also the author of two European intelligence thriller fiction books, and these books are about the struggle against terrorists and the Western world over nuclear weapons use. David's interest in history was always there throughout his life, but having been influenced by an R&D engineer father, he earned a B.S. degree in aerospace engineering from good old NC State University. David then attended the Naval Aviation Officer Canada School in Pensacola and was commissioned as Ensign Special Duty Intelligence. He then served as an Air ASW Intelligence Officer in Southeast Asia and Indian Ocean for Patrol Squadron 4. After his military service, David started his long career in information technology management in support of various Fortune 500 corporations. David resides in Milton, Georgia, and continues his writing projects. I think a short overview of his book, we of the Eastern Airlines family would enjoy reading. It's called The History of Eastern Airlines, 1926 to 1991. Eastern Airlines began in 1926 and last flew in January 18, 1991. Aviation pioneer Harold Pitcairn was the founder. He built airplanes and began the first carrier airmail service from New York to Atlanta under his company, Pitcairn Aviation. In 1929, Pitcairn was sold to Clements keys of National Air Transport for $2.5 million. Keys changed the name to Eastern Air Transport and began passenger service the next year on daily round trips between New York and Richmond. Now, the airline grew and was purchased by General Motors, and the name changed to Eastern Airlines in 1934. In 1938, World War I flying ace Edward V. Rickenbacker purchased the airline, led it to become by the 1950s the most profitable airline in the United States, and took it into the jet age in the 1960s. Then former astronaut Frank Borman became president of Eastern in 1975 and tried to manage the airline through the era of airline deregulation, labor union conflict, and heavy debt, ending the sale of Eastern to Frank Lorenzo and Texas Air in 1986. The airline entered bankruptcy in 1989 and ended service less than 2 years later. David, I would like to hear, and I know our listeners would like to hear more about what inspired you to write the history of Eastern Airlines 1926-1991. Can you share that with us?
Yes, I can. There's a lot of reasons. I guess one of them was that it was the first airline I ever flew on. And I was actually in training at Pensacola, and I had a child that was in Charlotte, and I was during the initial points of training, and so I was one of the lucky guys that was able to leave and fly up through Atlanta to Charlotte.
Oh.
And that, see my little baby daughter there, Holly. And so, you know, I flew on this Eastern plane, and it was just, to me, it was just the coolest thing. You know, here's an aerospace engineer graduate who hadn't even flown on an airliner yet, so that probably gives you some idea of how poor I was. But quite a flight, and, you know, I had my little, had my whites on, and everybody, you know, treats you pretty well when you're wearing your Navy whites, of course. And, you know, that was one of the primary reasons. Another one is that I've always wanted to write a book about aviation, and I was actually looking around. One of the problems of an author is, what's your next book going to be? Okay, this was really my my sixth book, and I really wanted to get a little bit out of the Revolutionary War and out of fiction and go back into history, and I really just started thinking about Eastern. And to me, it was just an iconic airline, one of the big four legacy airlines. And, you know, it is a fascinating story. I mean, there's just no question about it. And it's unfortunate that it had such a tragic end. And, you know, I'm sure that you guys who lived it there and people who have read about it, too, didn't want it to end that way either. But, you know, there were just too many forces there with the debts and deregulation and the unfortunate reality is that sometimes, you know, you just can't put all the factors together to keep your airline going. I was really hoping the airline would down to a smaller size before it ended, you know, but I guess it just couldn't do that with all of its debt.
David, I have a question. This is Neil. And first of all, let me ask you about the book itself. How many pages in that book?
It's not really too, you know, it's kind of in small print, I'll have to admit. It's published by McFarland and Company, and it's about, of the text part of it, it's like, you know, 210 pages or so. It has most of it, it's 15 chapters. It has, it does present, you know, a comprehensive view, and what I mean by that is it does cover, you know, from Pitcairn all the way through Eastern Air Transport and moved all the way through everything. It covers, you know, the first airmail flights that happened and, you know, just every aspect, all the presidents who were under Rickenbacker and then Hall and then Truman's era. And I have images of most all of the Eastern aircraft, except a few. The problem you have when you're an author is getting somebody to release an image for you of something that has a high, lots of dots per inch in it. So, but I have the route map, a lot of the period there, and I had to fight for a lot of the rat mouse. During the World War II, I was fighting over with the publisher trying to keep in an image that of the route down through from Miami to Brazil over to Africa. But to me, that was another iconic view of the route schedule, which people just don't really know about it when they were military airlift with the Military Transport Division. But it's not a very big book. It does take a little while to read, but you know, I think anybody from who likes Eastern Airlines would want to read about it. I know most of the people on this line here are former Eastern employees or people very much associated with Eastern. But you know, to me, to read about an airline stewardess in the original time that they were paid $125 a month and had to have a nurse degree or a college degree in, you know, to be on the aircraft. I mean, that's a story that not many people know about. So I cover a lot of the pension plans and a lot of different aspects to it. So I think I have a fairly balanced coverage of everything from people to aircraft to gates to, you know, to locations and routes and, you know, and the financials too.
David, this is Steve.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I was not aware of this book, and it sounds very interesting to me. Can you tell us how we and our listeners can get a copy of this book?
Well, it's on all the it's on Amazon and Barnes and Noble and, you know, pretty much any of the major online book services, online sites. It's also at McFarland and Company too, but really, it's pretty much everywhere. I don't actually, to be honest with you, I don't know if it's in a store. McFarland, who's published my three of my books here, they are really a Scholastic press, and because of that, they tend to sell to libraries. And unfortunately, there's not all that many libraries compared to, well, there's a lot of libraries, but what I really need is I need about you and a million of your friends to buy my book, and then I could retire.
David, this is Cecile. May I ask a question? How long did it take you to write? And I don't do Facebook, but I'll tell all my friends about it, and we'll post it. And apparently, that sells a lot of books, so we'll have to do that.
Yeah, it took me really a year to write. I'm pretty much semi-retired, so or probably 80% retired. I do some work out of the house, but it took a year. Usually books, while I was working full-time, would take me like, you know, 2.5 to 3 years. And then, you know, it takes another year minimum after a publisher agrees to it to really get it in print for most publishers. I mean, they put you on a schedule, and I've got another book coming out in May of 2014 with the U.S. Naval Institute Press, and it's about the early carrier raids in the Pacific from February to March 1942. So, you know, I left the state in aviation, but, it's a pretty long process unless you're able to dedicate a little work every day.
David, this is Jim. I was very pleased to hear that you are a former naval aviator. I served from 1951 to 56 with BP-11 out of NAS Brunswick. And when I tell people about the 14 and 16-hour trips we took on those airplanes, we were using the P-2B Neptunes.
Right.
And I assume you were probably in the P-3 in your days.
Yeah, it's pretty unnerving. And, of course, being an air intelligence officer, you know, what I did is briefed and debriefed cruise and flight followed, if you will, when I was on detachments. And I remember one of the longest flights I remember waiting for was out of Midway, and they were looking for a lost sailboat, which, of course, they never found. But that flight was 13 and a half hours on the P-3, and that's kind of stretching it, you know.
David, this is George. I have a couple of questions for you. Before you wrote your Eastern Airlines book, The History of Eastern Airlines, what type of research did you do on it?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I bought every book or looked at every resource I could find. And I have to say, I didn't get a whole lot. I didn't have an opportunity. It's really funny because my publisher was I guess, struggling for books, you know, and since I'd already published two through him, they really rushed me. Actually, they agreed to the book before I had finished it. And to some degree, that cut out one of the big aspects that I wanted to do with this book, and that was to try to find people like yourself to go over what it was like to really be a pilot at Eastern and that kind of thing. I don't have that. You know, I would have spent another year probably if I'd had not been a little bit of pressure from the publisher. And, of course, you know, when you're an author, you want the thing published. And I knew I could get it done. So I had to use pretty much published sources that were already there. A number of good ones. I didn't think I'd seen any of them that were covering the whole entire period from the very beginning of, you know, of Pitcairn, and he was born in 1897 or something all the way through. But and a lot of the later.
Donna from New Jersey, I'm signing off the call.
The later books, a lot of the later books there's a lot more books about the failure and the bankruptcy and Lorenzo and all that. But I didn't really want it to be about that. I wanted it to be about all the way from the beginning. So I try to balance the time period and effort in the book across the whole time period, not just in
David, this is Chuck.
Yes.
I like a little question, maybe kind of technical. From what I understand in my readings, on the 11th hour before the sale, there was three groups that were vying for the airline, from what I can understand. There was Lorenzo, the employees, and a group, I believe it was in Texas. Can you, through your research, did you find out why Borman and the bankers decided on Lorenzo as opposed to the employees?
I'll have to look into that. You know, I actually wrote this book and finished it a year and a half ago, so that's a little bit of detail I can't remember. But I don't remember specifically what it was, but I know in the details there was really no alternative. I was hoping for the guy who was the earlier plan, which was a little bit before that, where he was the guy who put on one of the Olympics, and that plan looked very logical to me, but I guess we just couldn't get the unions and Eastern's management to go with it. But Lorenzo, you know, he had known Borman for a while, and they had been talking earlier, of course, about the possibility that it might happen, because you know it was when you've got a billion plus debt, you know, and you just can't get every union to go down. It's hard to hold on. You know, you've got too many people involved in it, and the banks. You know, the banks really, I think, did everything, but they just couldn't keep throwing money at Eastern.
David, this is George Jen again. Did you interview anybody from Eastern Airlines for your book?
No, I didn't. That's what I was talking about earlier. I really, I tried to get a few people to do it, and through people I knew. And most of the people just were not available to do that. And then, of course, I had to rush to finish my last chapter, so I was unable to, you know, and really being an aerospace engineer, you know, I always wanted, and that was one of my projects, I actually, was going out to the airfield in Raleigh and watching the airlines, you know, airplanes come in and talk to pilots, but I didn't really have an opportunity to do that. So I guess
okay.
I could have another version of the book. And have some.
You could probably publish a sequel then.
Yeah.
There you go. Hey, anything that sells, I'll do it. But really honestly, I haven't made hardly anything in books. I mean, it's, you know, I've sold probably in total probably 2,000 books, two to 3,000 books max through all my books. I mean, it's, and there's a pitiful when you're 10% in royalties. I mean, it's like, you know, you must be kidding me. So, you know, you just need a staggering audience to be able to sell it.
Or you need a name that people know and recognize.
That's true. And nobody's ever heard of David Lee Russell. And by the way, I don't really go by the long name. The only reason why I use the middle name Lee is because when I was writing about the American Revolution, I figured, well, they should know I'm from the South, so I'm going to put my middle name in there. So.
It was because it's my brother's name. David Lee.
I'm just Dave Russell.
Milton, you're living in Milton, Georgia, and obviously you only had two airlines to choose from as far as your book, and Delta is brand X, so I'm glad you chose Eastern Airlines.
Oh, yeah, for sure. You know, I mean, I do fly. I certainly fly Delta. There's no question about it. But
yeah,
you know, I have a choice.
Well, you have no choice.
That's right.
You know, guys, and David, you and Jen are the experts in writing books. By the way, David, I highly recommend George Jen, our host here tonight, let's ask you a few questions. I highly recommend you read his novel, Flying Too Close to the Sun, a very riveting, that's kind of a word, that description of a book, wouldn't it? A riveting novel about an airline, and pretty much could be Eastern Airlines Air Shuttle. But what a fabulous novel that he wrote. It's an aviation mystery novel. So I recommend that I can plug. George, I'm plugging your book here.
I hear you. Thank you very much.
Don't worry about it. I'll do it, George.
David, you won't be able to put it down. It's a fabulous book. And I have ordered your book already, and I don't know when it's going to get here, but I've got it on order. But, you know, my question about writing books about history of a company, whether it's General Motors or Eastern Airlines, you know, I find a book like written by Robert Serling, fascinating to me. It's a historical book, but it's one that has not so much raw history as it is about its people of that airline. And Robert Serling, of course, was the brother of Rod Serling, who wrote Twilight Zone. And Robert wrote some great books. A couple of them turned into movies. But Robert Serling, the author, wrote The Left Seat and Stewardess and a lot of novels. But he wrote a book that just kept your attention because of the characters that he had in the historical accounting of that airline. He wrote not only about Eastern Airlines. He wrote one for TWA, and I believe he wrote one on Delta. And what a fabulous writer he was, a historical writer. But I guess that's a different type of writing. I don't know.
Well, it's very, you know, for my times of the American Revolution, I mean, in writing those books, you're absolutely right. I mean, there's really two paths you can go down. One of them is, I have to admit, like me, I'm only as good as my references, you know. In other words, I don't say anything that's really controversial. Only what's already been published is quoted or in history, you know, that somebody actually said it. I don't make up a whole lot, and I don't really try to analyze it too bad. This is not in a book of analysis. But you're right, the best books really are the ones that are, to some extent, probably more challenging, and that is to write a book that is really, really a story more than it is. I mean, mine's a story, but it's a story of the facts and realities of it and that kind of thing. And it is more slanted to the direct things that happened and influenced it. But have a story of a person, to bring an individual into it and have that be the focus of the individual outward, that really is the best kind of book. And those are the books really that sell better. I mean, there's no question about it. I mean, I understand that, you know, like any author would, I guess. I finished writing the book, you know, and if you just bear with me a second, I want to read just one little quote in my introduction. And this is what my view of what I saw when I went through this experience. You know, you really learn a lot. If you want to learn something, write a book about it, you know. But, you know, this is my view of what Eastern Airlines was. In the introduction, the last paragraph, Eastern Airlines was not just an airline. It was a vision, an idea, dreams, plans, flight schedules, routes, terminals, procedures, rules, aircraft, crashes, business, and dedicated people. While it came to a tragic end, it took to the skies every day on a mission for its passengers to take them on their journey from town to town in comfort and safety aboard the best aircraft in the world. There will always be an Eastern Airlines in the history of U.S. commercial aviation and in the memories of those who boarded planes with the plate on the fuselage. I mean, to me, that was what Eastern was.
Very good.
Hear, 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 hear. What a great quote. That is fabulous.
All righty.
Well, you get a special star there, David. And I hope you know, you probably do know, if you've listened to our program, that there's a new Eastern Airlines right around the corner.
I hope it'll happen.
We all do. Well, we certainly appreciate. Now, once again, would you tell us how we do have another guest with us tonight? But, David, once again, tell us how we can order or our listeners can order your book.
Yeah, just go on to Barnes & Noble or Amazon, and you can go in there by the title or by author David Lee Russell, and you'll see I'll come up there because I come up under – if you just go in there and put me right now in Google, you would see, you know, where it is. But basically just go into Amazon and look me up under David Lee Russell, and you'll see all my books, and that one will be there.
Very
and you
good.
Just click on buy right off the site, and they have some discounting going on now.
If a person wants a signed autograph, what do they do?
Well, they would have to, you know, unfortunately they're going to have to send it to me, and I'll be glad to. And I can send you the address, and I don't have my address on my davidleerussell.com website. I never thought about that, but if you, I can give you the email address. I mean, the actual. I guess they can email, and then I'll get a hold of them to get it signed. And you've got my email address. It's right as if you'd put it in the information, or it's actually available on my website.
Very good. We'll put it on the internet on our website. And by the way, you guys, like George, you and David, if I were an author with your talent and someone wanted an autograph, I would probably ask, especially if it's an autograph like what we're doing now over the air, and the only way, like David said, is to send me the book and I'll autograph it. Why can't you just have a little sticker or a label that you can autograph, and then that label be pasted in the inside cover? Is that not acceptable?
Speaking from my perspective, this is George. You know, I've had a couple of signings here at bookstores, and what I discovered was that people really like to come by and shake your hand and, you know, get to meet you personally. For an autographed copy. I think I sent you an autographed copy, didn't I?
Sure did. Somebody stole it, though.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, I can't help you out with that one.
Okay.
But, you know, I know, like, when at the bookstore I had the signing, the following week Nelson DeMille was there. So I went over for his signing, and he gave me an autographed copy of his book, and I gave him an autographed copy of my book. So, I mean, I don't know. To me, it's much more personal to have it on a book. I mean, it's not a bad idea, but I don't know. Don't know. I mean, you know, some places, what they do is you'll see, like on Amazon, that they'll have, or, for example, in the Mysterious Bookshop, which is located downtown New York here, they have autographed copies available for sale in the store. They cost probably $10 more. I don't know why, but they do. But other than that, I've never really heard of anyone, you know, signing a stick-on and mailing it to somebody. But it's not a bad idea, you know, if they would be happy with that, you know.
Well, the reason I suggested that is I collect books, old books. And on several occasions that I have bought a book in a bookstore, I have seen that done.
I thought that was when you go to a bookstore, I thought that usually meant that somebody had done a signing and the store would actually buy. In fact, I've had some signings and the stores will buy, you know, 10 or 20 of your books, and you sign them and they'll put the sticker on it.
Oh, okay.
Right? But I don't know how you get it from an online bookseller.
Yeah.
Neil, if I could make a comment on that,
sure.
I don't know that the value of the book would be there, though, after years from now, because the sticker could probably be removed and replaced to another book, and I think the value of the book would be less than if it was originally signed.
Yeah, yeah. Well, David...
Because stickers are removable.
Yeah, we'll move on to our next... guest, and David, thank you so much for being with us tonight. And as I've mentioned to you in our conversation before the show, we'll put the book on the internet and on our website and how to order the book. So thank you very much, and congratulations on having your book published, and especially about Eastern Airlines. We certainly appreciate you being with us tonight.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, David.
Chuck?
Our next guest is one of our EAL radio show members who will tell us about a new service he hopes may interest our over 750 members and friends. John Ruth is the owner of the Travel Squad, a full-service travel agency. It's affiliated as an independent contractor with Montrose Travel of Montrose, California. It's a $150 million a year travel agency. The Travel Squad serves both business and leisure travelers with a portfolio of hundreds of hotel properties, major cruise lines, major airlines. His specialty is group travel with worldwide destinations by air, land, and sea. He is the managing partner of Independent Cloud Computing Services, started in March 2010 to the present. It's out of Philadelphia, PA. ICCS provides share network hardware, infrastructure, and software for government and industry. It is a Microsoft partner firm selling and supporting all Microsoft products in addition to custom engineered software for specific needs. John also owns Coastal World Airways, which was established in January 1989 to the present. It was also based in Philly, PA. Coastal World Airways, Coastal Worldwide Travel Services, and TravelingSquad.com are full-service travel and transportation companies offering service of aircraft charters using Boeing 757s, 767s, and 777s. Complete travel and vacation planning, cruising, and custom tours. John was also a sales representative with Eastern Airlines from March 1985 to January 1991. He was based in Atlanta, Miami, and Philadelphia. John, can you tell us more about what you will be offering our EAL listeners and members?
Sure. Thanks, Chuck, and everyone. Neil approached me about this, I guess, about a month ago, and he mentioned that oftentimes that there's groups within the EAL family that like to go traveling, and me being in that business, he wanted to know if I could put together any kind of, you know, tours or trips to different places, and I said, well, why don't I just create an affinity website, you know, on the web, both on the travel button on the radio show, and then I gave it my own address. And it's basically a duplication of the Traveling Squad website, which is, again, a full-service online travel agency. And the one that I set up for Eastern Airlines is kind of geared towards the EAL family, where we have different specials that we run from time to time that we'll put up, And if anybody actually has a request or a group that wants to go somewhere, all they need to do is call me or send me an email, and I can put together several different packages to pick from, like for ski trips or cruises or land tours, or we even do safaris in Africa. So there's something for everybody. But anyway, we set this up for the AL family, that they can go on there and browse around and price different packages. You can also call me direct if you have any questions, or email me. And I think it's a good program, and hopefully the membership will utilize it. And I think it's going to be a success.
Well,
so,
I have a question for you.
Yeah. Chuck?
This is Chuck. Would you recommend, whether either in a group or just family outings and stuff like that, would you recommend travel insurance?
Yes. And I'll tell you why. I've had a couple of instances where it has paid off. And I'm not pushing it. I'm just saying it's an option. But my next-door neighbor went on a cruise with her children, her daughter and son-in-law and her two grandchildren, and she went on a cruise to Mexico. And they were in Cozumel, and she had a heart attack on the ship. And they took her to a local hospital, and they, got her stabilized. And they had to fly her back to Houston for further treatment, and then from there transfer back to Philadelphia. But before they left Mexico, Mexico won't take your Blue Cross Blue Shield card or your Medicare card. They wanted cash. So she and her son-in-law had to max out their credit cards to get her out of the hospital in Mexico and then fly to Houston, where she, obviously got, she could use her Medicare card and everything, but that ultimately was reimbursed. But the fact of the matter is, it costs her almost $14,000 to get out of Mexico to just to get home. And if you didn't have, say you didn't have that kind of cash or that kind of credit line, that's where travel insurance would pay off, because the travel insurance would pay that bill. So I would recommend it. Also, the other reason I would recommend it is because if you get into the wintertime in the Northeast and other selected areas where the air traffic is congested and delayed for hours on end, and say, for instance, you're leaving New York and you have a cruise, your cruise connection is in Miami, and you're on a tight schedule and you want to leave Saturday evening or Sunday morning to catch the ship when it sails at 2 or 3 o'clock, and say for instance there's a snowstorm in New York and you're socked in, you're not going to be on that cruise. So I would personally take out the insurance to get reimbursed, number one, for the expense that you laid out for all that, and then, B, be able to reschedule it. Or, if there's a way, catch a flight to meet the ship at another destination, it would be well worth it, because it's not that expensive. It's I don't have the rates in front of me, but we have it available on the website. We have links to it, and you can actually get a quote. So there's a little link down on the one about halfway down the right hand side of the Eastern Airlines Travel Club page, which says travel insurance, and you can actually get a quote there. So I would highly recommend it.
Thank you very much.
John, question: is there such a thing as kidnap insurance?
No, not to my knowledge. I mean, there may be, in foreign countries. In South America, there may be, because there's a lot of that going on down there. But your travel insurance. Well, to my knowledge, I haven't seen it yet. I mean, it hasn't been put you know, we use several different vendors, and we haven't seen anything like that yet. Not saying it's not out there, but I have not seen it. We have our, you know, our standard travel insurance vendors that we use, but that's a good idea because the Middle East and
yeah.
a lot of these countries that are in turmoil with political uprisings and everything, I'd buy it.
You know,
in fact, I had a neighbor, another neighbor, believe it or not, years ago. I went to school with his son, and you probably remember this one, Joseph Sisipio. He was a banker who lived in Norristown, Pennsylvania, which is my hometown. And he was the manager of the American Bank and Trust Company up the street for years. And all, and then he got a job in, I think he was in Lebanon. And then from Lebanon, he wound up in Iran, and that's when they took the hostages in Iran, and he was one of them. And he was in captivity, I think, for 5 or 6 years. And he didn't do anything.
You know,
but
John, I'm surprised that an insurance underwriter doesn't think of offering that special insurance for kidnapping.
Well, like I said, there may be companies out there that are underwriting it, but I haven't seen it yet. I mean, I'm sure they have it in, like I said, in foreign countries, along with you know, the regular travel insurance. But
yeah,
I mean, it's probably out there somewhere. In fact, I'll check into it. I'll let you know if I find anything on it. But yeah, there's parts of this world right now that I wouldn't go to. And I'm sure that, you know, if I were going to go away somewhere, I'd try to stay with some of the most friendliest democracies that we could find.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of stuff going on in the world right now, and I know that there's a lot of opportunity out there. I mean, you know, there's a lot of places to go and see, like the Middle East, Israel, and all the countries in the Middle East. But the thing is, you know, you don't ever know when there's going to be a rocket flying over
right.
your head.
Yeah.
So
you
Jim
Hart and I were talking before the show about Jim and his wife. No, I guess it was you, Jim, that went on a cruise, and you and Trudy often take that cruise down through the Bahamas out of Port Palm Beach or whatever it is down there.
That's right.
I guess it's Port Palm Beach.
Yep.
But you take that cruise often, and let's say that a group of Eastern people want to take that cruise, and Jim will tell you the name of the cruise ship in just a second. Let me state my question. Let's say a group of people wants to take a cruise for about 3 days. What is that? Three nights and 3 days, 4 days, or two nights
it's
and 3 days?
It leaves,
I could
it
never
leaves,
figure that out.
It leaves on Saturday at 6 in the evening, but you board the ship at noontime, and you have your lunch on board the ship, and you get settled in your cabin. The ship leaves at 6, and there's one dining room I like. It's called the Crystal Room. It's just beautiful. They have another one called the Rio, which is for casual people. That is, people who want to go in there in their flip flops and so on. But my meal on this trip was 8:45, and they have a floor show at 10 o'clock, and it is a really good floor show. After the floor show, they have all kinds of activities. I didn't go to bed the first night until morning until 3:15 because I was playing the slot machines in the casino, and I had some really good luck. I came away with about $800, and I get up. After the floor show, there was a group of people having a blast dancing and so on. So I just sat and watched them. So I got to bed and was up again at 7 o'clock in the morning, went into the Rio for breakfast, and it was a fantastic breakfast. They have all kinds of shore tours that you can take. I stayed on the boat like my wife and I do because we've been to Freeport, Grand Bahamas so many times. But then the boat, actually you come back on the boat at 5:30 in the afternoon, get ready for your dinner and floor show again, and casino and all of that sort of stuff. And then I went to bed the second night at about 12:30. You get up the third morning, have a nice breakfast, and you leave the ship as leisurely as you want by about 10 or 12 o'clock. But for $119, everything they offer, the name of it is the BahamasCelebration.com.
Now,
and you'll find
Jim,
it on
Mark,
here.
Hey, Jim, my question, my question to John is that if a group of people would book a cruise like that, I'm thinking about our host here, it would be a lot of fun to do something like that. Is there an advantage to go through a travel agent? Can they save money? $119 sounds pretty cheap to me.
It is pretty cheap. I think
a pilot's dream.
I think the travel agent would make a special arrangement with the ship. Of course, you know, unfortunately, the airlines are not paying commissions to any degree to travel agents. And I was with Eastern in the days where travel agents were getting 10 and 15% for booking just the air travel and add a cruise or something to it, and the commission was really nice. But this is one of the things when the new Eastern gets online that they're going to have to wrestle with. Are they going to offer travel agents, some sort of a fee for booking the new Eastern? I think it might be a thing very well worth considering.
What do you think, John?
I think it would be a great idea because it's a good way to market your product to, you know, thousands of travel agents who would sell to tens of thousands of customers. So your marketing costs for something like that, even if you paid, you know, a 5 or 10% commission on your tickets, you'd have a built-in marketing program because travel agents would sell it, you know, like they'd
really you're right, John. I was manager of convention and group sales for Eastern for a little over 1 year of my 11-year tenure with them. And we used to really help the travel agent, and I think it would be absolutely necessary to get ourselves off and running. I was a member of ASTA, American Society of Travel Agents. Are they still active, John?
Yes, I'm a member.
Oh, very good. ASTA.
We belong to ASTA. We belong to CLIA. We belong to IATA. We belong to Radius. We have, you know, all these ensemble travel group, you know, but yes, ASTA is still out there.
Good. That's good.
And we're members of it.
Well,
be a great idea. Did you know Rich Harkness in Philadelphia that ran the Philadelphia sales office, Jim?
I knew Henry Felker. Felker. Did you know him?
Yeah, I knew him. I worked for Rich at System One at Scott Plaza down there next to the airport.
Okay.
That's where the System One offices were. And then after the company folded, I went to work for a travel agency out in Valley Forge that used System One.
Uh-huh.
But they, I think that if the new Eastern were to market through travel agencies, I think that would be a tremendous advantage to them because they'd have a friendly marketing team in place. And they wouldn't have to spend millions of dollars on TV commercials and billboards and everything else.
You're right.
Jim and John, I hear another question from Cecile.
Yeah, John, the other thing I wanted to point out is that when you're dealing with a travel agency, it's far better because if you get stuck in a foreign country with some problem, all you got to do is call your travel agent. And they will solve the problem for you. That happened to me. No, I wasn't kidnapped in Bogota, Colombia, but that happened to me when I went to visit. And I wish the airlines would go back to paying what they rightfully earn to the travel agencies.
Right.
Yeah, we actually have an 800 number you can call if you're in trouble anywhere in the world, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So that's one advantage that you do have.
George,
I have a question.
George, I'm going to break in here. George?
Yeah, I have a question. You know, after I left Eastern, I went to work for U.S. Airways for 18 more years. And the question I have is, do the former Eastern employees get employee discounts on any airlines today?
Oh, yes.
Yes, they have. If you contact Vito Borelli in Miami, he's got the whole list.
Okay, I didn't know that.
He get deals on everybody, just about everybody.
It's in our monthly newsletter also.
Yeah, and it's on the website, by the way, EAL Radio Show, and I have not updated it, but I will update it, and I update it because I open up the EARA newspaper every month, and there are more of the airlines that Vito has worked into our benefits, I guess we'd call it, retirement benefits that we have privileges are either good discounts. And so go to the EAL radio show or either the EARA newspaper, and you'll find plenty take you just about anywhere in the world.
Well, but how do you prove that you were a former Eastern employee? That's another question I have.
They have a list of people who are receiving pensions, and they will check their pension list. And if you're on that, you're home free.
Well, I still have my Eastern ID. Would they take that, even though they wouldn't be able to recognize me anymore?
I think they would. I think they would.
Yeah, they would.
Yep.
They have deals on just about every airline in the world.
No, I didn't know because I get free travel because I'm a retired U.S. Airways employee, but I didn't know what the status was for the former Eastern people.
Yeah, yeah.
Hopefully when the new Eastern flies, you'll get some deals on that too.
Oh yeah,
there you go. Very good, John. Thank you so much for being with us tonight. We certainly appreciate your information about travel, and often we'll have you back often. And also,
all right, my pleasure.
Our website will carry information about cruises that you recommend that groups of Eastern people might want to consider taking.
Yeah, absolutely. If we can, if anybody wants to put a group together, I can get deals everywhere on cruise lines. I mean, right now you can get deals everywhere, period, because the travel business is way down. But we've got some incredible cruise deals over the winter. So just have everybody check out the website. I use the old advertising moniker, fly-eastern.com. That's the website. Neil, you can put the link up on the radio show site. And I already have the travel club site connected to the radio show thing.
Very good.
If you have a question, give me a call.
Very good. Okay. The next.
Okay.
Very good. And the
we
next
have
sounds.
Show.
The next sounds that you hear, I will see if I can crank it up because we've got some news of the past week in aviation.
Let
me see if I can get the right music here for that. Jim Hart.
Let's find out what was in the news this week of November 11th to the 15th. George, Jen, would you like to share our first story?
Sure. Dateline, November 14th. The FAA is investigating an incident on a Southwest Airlines flight during which passengers said they heard from the cockpit, quote, "We're going down," unquote, before the plane descended rapidly. Flight 3426 was headed to Raleigh-Durham in North Carolina from Tampa late Tuesday when passengers said a cabin pressure problem prompted the cockpit alert. Southwest stated the captain was informing flight attendants that the plane was descending to deal with the pressurization issue, but the message went out over the public address system. passenger said it was a very scary experience. Phyllis Westerman told AM 750 and 95.5 FM News Talk Radio that she saw flight attendants panicking when the oxygen masks would not deploy. Quote, "My husband and I heard a flight attendant panicking and yelling into the cockpit, 'Manually deploy them,' she was saying, and nothing was happening." Westerman said, quote, "That's when the pilot came on the PA system saying that we're going down," unquote. Passenger Shelley Wills told WTVD TV in Raleigh, Durham, which first reported the incident. She stated that passengers at first didn't believe what they were hearing. Quote, "And everyone is looking around like, is this a joke? Is he serious?" Wills said. And then you felt the nose dive. Another passenger, Grace Stroud, told CNN that she heard, quote, "We're in trouble. We're going down," on the PA system. Will said passengers all around her started pulling out cell phones to call their loved ones. She texted her daughter and husband, "I love you, Alyssa. My plane is going down." But wait, I got something to put in there. Alyssa, that's not her husband. She only texted her daughter. She didn't tell her husband that. Anyway, Southwest spokesman Brad Hawkins told the Atlanta Journal-Constitution the flight had 96 passengers and a crew of 5. He said as part of the procedure to resolve the cabin pressure issue, the captain notified the crew that the plane was going to a lower altitude just before an unplanned but controlled descent. The maintenance issue was resolved before the flight safely landed at Raleigh-Durham, Hawkins stated on Thursday, and that was taken directly from the Atlanta Constitution. Cecile?
Cecile.
Can you hear me?
Yes,
can you hear me?
Go ahead.
Okay, I'm sorry. November 14th, passengers aboard a U.S. Airways flight in Philadelphia on Wednesday banded together in support for a legally blind man who was kicked off the plane for his unruly guide dog. Flight attendants said Albert Reese's guide dog was out of control, but other passengers wholeheartedly disagreed, refusing to fly with the airline if the blind man was not allowed on the plane, ABC 7 reported. The flight was canceled, and the passengers were bused to Long Island by the airline. Passengers told the station that the flight attendant wouldn't clear the flight for takeoff without the dog going under the plane's seat. The dog waited under the seat at first, but after the plane sat on the tarmac for about an hour and a half, the dog became restless. The lady comes back and gets very insistent and said, "Look, I don't understand what you want me to do." I said, "He's as best as he can. He's where he needs to be," Mr. Easy said. One passenger said others come to the man's defense. She came back and said to him, "You've got about a minute to get this straightened out," the passenger told ABC 7, and he tried to do whatever he could. But she went back to the front of the plane. "We were taxiing like we were going to take off, and at that point in time, we're about to take off, and all of a sudden, the captain gets on the PA and says, 'We have to head back to the terminal.' We were all kind of raised our voices and said, 'This is a real problem.' So the captain winds up coming out of the cockpit, and he basically asks us all to leave the aircraft. Officials at U.S. Airways said Mr. Reese was belligerent and the crew's safety was in jeopardy, but other passengers said that is not true. Mr. Reese took to Facebook to express his disappointment. 'I cannot believe this. I was removed from the plane that I was supposed to be on to go home from Philadelphia because my dog couldn't sit in a spot for an hour and a half on the tarmac. Such a joke,' he said, adding that the other passengers were very supportive. There were 35 people on the flight tonight. Every one of them stood up in solidarity for the discriminatory treatment I received and the way my dog was unwelcome on the flight," he said. Miriam Woods Baxter commented, "My brother-in-law was on the plane with you. He is disgusted with the way you were treated. I'm sorry you were treated this way. This was taken from the Washington Times.
Dateline Washington. Airline consumer complaints filed with DOT's Aviation Consumer Protection Division during the first 9 months of the year were down 14.1% from the first 9 months of 2012. According to the U.S. Department of Transportation's Air Travel Consumer Report released today, from January to September 2013, the department received 10,439 consumer complaints, down from a total of 12,153 filed during the first period of 9 months, for the first 9 months of 2012. In September, the department received 1,008 complaints from the airline service from consumers, down 6.8% from the 1,081 complaints filed in September 2012, and down 23.5% from the 1,318 received in August 2013. The consumer report also includes data on tarmac delays, on-time performance cancellations, chronically delayed flights, and the causes of the first flight delays filed with the Department's Bureau of Transportation Statistics, the BTS, by the reporting carriers. In addition to the consumer report, the consumer report contains information on airline bumping, mishandled baggage reports filed by consumers and the air carriers, with the air carriers, and disability and discrimination complaints received by Department of Transportation's Aviation Consumer Protection Division. The consumer also reports, the consumer report also includes reports of incidents involving the loss, death, or injury of pets traveling by air as required by the file by the U.S. carriers. And this is a news release from the Air Travel Consumer Report. Now, Fort Lauderdale in 2012, Silver Airways today announced that it was named one of the top 10 best U.S. airlines in the prestigious Condé Nast Traveler's 26th Annual Reader's Choice Awards. This is the second distinction the Fort Lauderdale-based airline has received this year. In February, Silver Airways was named the 2013 Regional Airline of the Year by Air Transport World in recognition of the carrier's outstanding growth and achievements since its launch in May 2011. To commemorate the twin 2013 industry and passenger awards, Silver Airways is saying thank you with a double wow fare sale beginning November 12, 2013. And by the way, members of EARA have travel benefits with Silver Airways. George.
From Dallas, this time we have another Southwest story, but this one is much better. Southwest Airlines announced today that it has earned the 2014 Military Friendly Employer title by Victory Media, publisher of GI Jobs and Military Spouse, making this the fifth consecutive year that the carrier has received the honor criteria. Criteria for the survey included a benchmark score across key programs and policies, such as the strength of the of company military recruiting efforts, the percentage of new hires with prior military service, retention programs, and company policies on National Guard and Reserve service. Southwest aggressively seeks to hire military talent and has found that hiring from the military community is a strategic competitive advantage as well as an invaluable asset to the growing employee family. Southwest has successfully placed veterans within ground operations, flight operations, dispatch, and maintenance. Quote, our Southwest Airline employees are the heart and soul of our company, and we are honored to work alongside the more than 5,900 active and retired military members who strengthen our Southwest family, unquote, said Jeff Lamb, Executive Vice President, Chief People and Administration Officer. Quote, our employees are our greatest asset, and thanks to their warrior spirit and servant's heart, we've built Southwest's legacy of connecting people with what's important in their lives, unquote. Jim? Jim, you there?
hosted by Harrison.
Yes, Jim?
Yes.
Go ahead with yours. Jim Hart.
Yes, I'm sorry. Okay. The body of a Florida man who fell from the plane likely has been found, posted by the Harrison Barrett, CBS 12 News. Fort Lauderdale, Florida authorities said Saturday that they have likely found the body of a Florida man who they say fell out of a private airplane 3 days into a land and a sea search that included parts of the Atlantic Ocean near Miami. Even though we presume that the body found is that of Gerardo Nails, investigators are pending official identification from the medical examiner's office. Detective Alvaro Zubalata said in a statement, the presumed body of 42-year-old Nails was found in an area of mangroves around 10:30 a.m. Zublata said a day earlier, police, air, and water units were scouring the sea and had expanded their search area because of currents and wind. The pilot's identity had not been released, nor has the intended destination of the airplane. Authorities said there were only two people on board. The pilot of the Piper PA-46 called for help Thursday afternoon, radioing, "Mayday, mayday, mayday," and telling an air traffic controller that a door was open and a passenger had fallen from the airplane. The aircraft had just taken off from Tamiami Executive Airport, located south of Miami, police said. Federal Aviation Administration officials said the plane was flying at about 2,000 feet, some 8 miles southeast of the Tamiami Airport. Police said investigators have no evidence of foul play. According to a report on the website liveatc.net, the pilot calmly radioed the air traffic controller. LiveATC.net provides live air travel control broadcasts from control towers and radar facilities around the world. I have a door ajar and a passenger that fell down. I'm 6 miles from Tamiami, the pilot said. You said you got a passenger that fell out of your plane? The air traffic controller responds, that's correct, sir, the pilot said. He opened the back door and he just fell out of the airplane.
Wow.
Neil.
Okay. Dateline Moscow, November 17th. That was yesterday, 2013. A Russian passenger airliner crashed Sunday night while trying to land at the airport in the city of Kazan. An official said all 50 people aboard were killed. The Boeing 737 belonging to Turkestan Airlines crashed about 7:20 p.m. local time. There were no immediate indications of what may have caused the crash. Weather in the city soon after the crash was reported to be light precipitation and winds of about 8 meters or 18 miles per hour. Kazan is about 700 kilometers or about 450 miles east of Moscow, where the flight originated. A spokeswoman for the emergencies ministry, Irina Rosias, said there were 44 passengers and 6 crew members aboard, and all had been killed. Russia's last plane crash came in January, when a Russian-made Tupolev belonging to Red Wings airline careened off the runway at Moscow's Vnukovo Airport, rolled across a snowy field, and slammed into the slope of a nearby highway, breaking into pieces and catching fire. Investigators say equipment failure caused the crash, which killed 5 people. You know, lots of things happen in a week's time in aviation. There are so many people that are flying, so many airlines that carry our passengers, and so we want to bring you the reports each week of events that have happened that have made news. Jim?
Just one other thing, Neil, that I'd like to add. This is George.
Yes,
George. For those of our listeners who haven't heard, the former head of the IAM at Eastern, Charlie Bryan, passed away on November 5th, He was 79 years old. It was reported that he had suffered from leukemia and Parkinson's disease.
Neil, do you want me to make mention of the Miami picnic of the EARA group?
Just one extra thought about Charlie Bryan, and thank you, George, for bringing that to our attention. It was in the national news media because he was such a strong force with Eastern Airlines in the IAM, International Association of Machinists. He was the president of that union, and was right in there at the very end of Eastern's life. And so thanks for bringing that to our attention, George. Jim, go ahead.
You're welcome.
On the 8th of November, about 225 retirees from the Eastern Airlines Retirees Association gathered at the C.B. Smith Park in Pembroke Pines, Florida. And we had a nice get-together, a lot of socializing, a good amount of food, hot dogs, hamburgers, sausage, and some light refreshments and some beer. And Vito Borelli, who has been very active in our chapter in Miami, was able to obtain about 15 or 20 passes on the various airlines. And so we had a raffle. We had raffle tickets, and all of those, we mentioned Silver Airways here. I know Silver Airways, I think we gave away four positive space passes for a couple. And I made kind of a joke. Sarah Palin, of course, is from Alaska, and Alaska Airways had given us a couple of passes, and I didn't realize that Alaska Airways serves part of the East Coast as well. I was wondering how people were going to get out to Alaska to use those passes, but it was just great. Everyone had a wonderful time, and that's an annual event that we have. Do I hear any champagne music yet, Neil? There it is. I hear the champagne music in the background, so it must be time to say goodnight, folks. We hope you enjoyed tonight's show, and you'll tell your friends about us, especially other members of the Eastern family. Tune in next week when the radio voice of Eastern Airlines brings you another exciting show. We wish you a very successful week in whatever you undertake to do, and remember, keep the blue side up, have plenty of airspeed and plenty of altitude, and from all of us, good night, Eastern family.
Good night, Eastern family.
Good night, Eastern.
Good night, everyone.
Very good show. Very good show.
Very good.